Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. Thanks to Brett Winterbull for filling in for me on Friday. Good, bad, crazy martinis for all of you. As usual, we start with the good, and today is deadline day for signing up for the insurance that you have to get through the Obamacare exchanges or on your own without subsidies through the insurance carriers, and we have a few different tidbits of good martinis associated with that, some of them more ironic than actual good. Number one, you've got the fact that healthcare.gov down today, at least for part of the day, as people are rushing to comply with the law potentially. They, of course, will chalk it up to huge demand and huge volume for something they have to buy. Also, the White House countdown clock for folks signing up to Obamacare, not accurate. And the other good news is that even though the White House is spinning some enrollment numbers as hard and fast as they can here, Chuck Todd over at NBC says it's still going to be an albatross for Democrats this year. So, Jim, kind of a mixed bag as we get close to the clock striking midnight here.
Yeah, I mean, let's note that obviously this is not what you want to see on your final day when allegedly all the procrastinators will be signing up and stuff. All of a sudden, oh, sorry, site's not available. What really got me was the fact that they said, according to the graphic up on the site, it was scheduled maintenance. Greg, does this mean some genius said, hey, let's schedule maintenance for the morning of the last day? Was this the person who, you know, generally thought that was the best time to do this maintenance? Or they're just using some sort of, we're having technical difficulties message you used to get on broadcast television when the signal went down and stuff like that. Bob Wazinski, I believe is his name. I always mangle his name every time I say it. Raised as a column out, which is a really good point. Obviously, the first question is, of these, you know, 6 million that they're touting, by the end of the day or by the, next couple of days, we should get some number higher than 6 million that the administration will release with fireworks and, you know, great fanfare. But we won't have two other figures that are kind of important. The first is how many have paid, as we've emphasized. And what's really interesting is that, you know, the standard, you know, question from folks on the right is, well, how many people have paid the first month? This column suggests maybe the issue should be how many paid the second month as well, because he points out that 3-5% of the people who paid in January didn't pay in February. Those payments don't get any easier, and some people start deciding they can't afford it, they don't feel like they need to afford it, or they just don't have, you know, they say, well, the check is in the mail, and it really isn't. Then the second one is how many of these people who signed up, 6 million, and I'm making air quotes as I say 6 million, didn't have insurance before, and how many people had insurance before, had it canceled under Obamacare with, you know, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, and then had to sign up for new plans. And I know at least a couple people who are in this category. In other words, what is the net reduction in the number of uninsured? This column suggested that up to half of the people who are signing up right now had insurance before. So if that's the case, and let's say it's 6 million and change, and of those 3 million had insurance before, then we pass a law because of the intense crisis of 30 million to 40 million uninsured people in this country, Greg. 5 years later, first year of implementation, the exchanges are open, and we've reduced it by 2 to 3 million. That's not that much. And in the process, we've caused this enormous grief and aggravation and higher rates and higher copays and higher deductibles, and doctors aren't happy with it and hospitals aren't happy with it. All of these problems have been done in the name of a cause that I think, you know, there's actually a pretty broad agreement about. It'd be nice if people who didn't have insurance could get insurance. We've mitigated one problem by about 2 million people and caused enormous headaches for millions upon millions upon millions of other people in this country. A massive failure in terms of policy when you create more problems than you solve.
As encouraging as Chuck Todd's Senate forecast was, that this will still be an albatross for a lot of different Senate Democrats, both incumbent and challenger, he also had another analysis about where we stand with Obamacare that has a lot of people on the right scratching their heads. Here's a couple of his comments as he was speaking with Matt Lauer on the Today Show.
But I think in the big picture here, you got to remember where they started. There was real fear inside the White House that this law could collapse, that they wouldn't get here. So at a minimum, it means the law is unrepealable, Matt. It means that it's here to stay. So then we've advanced to the next part of the debate is, okay, then how do you fix the problems that people think are there?
And then Lauer also brought up the criticisms that we've mentioned all along, and you alluded to a minute ago, Jim, about how many people are actually paying that first and now second and third month and beyond premiums. And Chuck Todd says, no, nobody's saying they're cooking the books here. I mean, the $6 million is pretty real. There's been an insurance company examination about who's been paying, and they say so far it looks like over 80% of those who have signed up have actually paid in the first month. So,
if 80% of $6 million is about $5 million, Greg. So that all right there. And then of those 80%, if like I said earlier, if Luzinski is correct that it's half of them had it before, then you're looking at 2.5 million people went from the uninsured pile to the insured pile. That's a drop in the bucket. Chuck Todd's point that it's unrepealable. My first thought is, why? Of those 2.5 million, there will be some people who really like this new order, so to speak, more than the other one. But there are lots of people who don't like it. And lots of people who feel like they've been suckered and told promises that weren't true. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, things like that. I mean, I guess the real question is, repeal could pass quite easily, depending on what the alternative is. And you're hearing a little more discussion among Republicans of, okay, we all agree this is an absolute disaster and it's a mess and it is forced changes upon people that they don't like. So what is a more liberty-minded approach? And by the way, individual aspects like staying on your parents' plan until you're 26. There are a lot of folks on the right who aren't enormous fans of that. But, all right, do you want to do it in the early 20s? Do you want to do it while if you're enrolled in college? All of these aspects could be changed. But any further reforms that come forth are not going to be shoved down the throat of the country by one party. Because you have Obama in office until 2017. And you have Republicans control the House and are in a good course to control the Senate. And so I think that Obamacare will ultimately be seen as a great teachable moment for the country. Never, ever, ever give Democrats complete control of all branches of government.
Well, hopefully that lesson's been learned. We'll see. It tends to be a pretty short memory among voters from time to time, but we'll find out. All right. On to the official bad martini today, and this is can be seen at the campaign spot. Jim reported on this earlier today. The multinational consulting firm Deloitte surveyed 109 North American chief financial officers of major companies from February 7th through the 21st. Besides a drop in optimism about the economy, the CFO's thoughts on health care and changes from Obamacare / the Affordable Care Act are particularly interesting. Last quarter's findings indicated that Obamacare had caused 40% of U.S. companies to pass or consider passing health care costs onto staff, and it also caused 32% to increase their focus on wellness management. Deeper down, 60% of CFOs say they plan to pass health care costs onto staff, 12% expect to pass them on to customers, 23% say they expect to reduce the scope of benefits offered to some staff, 16% expect to reduce the level or value of benefits provided. So, Jim, when we keep talking about the number of people negatively impacted like we just were compared to the people who might be in a little bit better a situation, the numbers are really heading in the wrong direction for this administration and, unfortunately, and more importantly, for the country as a whole.
Two things that kind of jumped out at me. One is the sheer number who say the healthcare costs are going on to staff. Remember, as people in the individual markets started getting their plans canceled, the spin from the administration afterwards was, well, okay, so we kind of louse things up in the individual market, but for most Americans who get insurance through their employers, it's not going to be that big a deal. You won't even notice it. Everybody go back to sleep, go back to watching Dancing with the Stars and stuff like that. And the answer, it turns out, well, actually, no, you're going to get higher premiums. The next thing, 12% passing costs on to customers. Most intriguingly, says energy and resources is the field that is most likely to cite this approach. My guess is if your electric bill goes up, if your gas, if you pay more at the price of gas, all of these companies, if things start getting more expensive, Obamacare is going to be a contributing factor to that. But the really horrible numbers in here, and for what it's worth, most of the companies were not saying that Obamacare was the reason they weren't hiring. Basically, nobody's feeling good about the economy and likely to hire, particularly in the United States. It's we were at 1.7% was a projection of the increase of hiring there. Now we're down to 1.1%. This is one of the lowest in the history of the survey. The economic news has been kind of sputtering along. There's been really bad months past couple months because, it's the winter, lots of snow. You can't do home construction because of winter, everything, People were making their explanations for why the economy was looking bad. I don't think bad winter weather explains a projection of 1% hiring for the coming year. I don't think that's that. I think there's a great deal of anxiety in corporate America, and that points to a bad economy, at least for the year to come, and who knows what 2015 is going to look like.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and back to Obamacare. There was a panel discussion, or at least two senators, joining Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday yesterday, John Barrasso of Wyoming, and independent, who's really a Democrat, Angus King of Maine. And towards the end of the conversation, Chris Wallace asked a couple of pointed questions of Senator King and got an interesting response. Here's how that went.
2 points, if I may, sir. One, then why is Harry Reid saying he's not going to allow a vote on the fixes? And two, speak directly and briefly, because we're about to run out of time, to Senator Barrasso's comment about the fact that a lot of doctors, a lot of hospitals are being excluded by what Obamacare is offering.
Now that's a big, you know, there's no such thing as Obamacare. You can't sign up for Obamacare. You sign up for an Anthem policy or an Aetna policy or a WellPoint policy. It's private insurance, and private insurance companies have been doing closed networks for years.
So I guess the lesson here, Jim, is if the government mandates that insurance companies change the rules and the insurance companies comply, it's the insurance company's fault when people are miserable with the new reality.
I don't know where to begin with this one, Greg. I have three observations. The first is Angus King is called an independent. You noted accurately that he votes with the Democrats most often. I guess the best way of describing a Maine independent is really just what we would call a folksy Democrat. He's got the mustache. He just seems like Wilford Brimley or, you know, he should be telling you about Quaker Oats or talking to you about Pepperidge Farm or something like that. He's a nice enough guy. I'll take him over, you know, Alan Grayson or something like that. But, you know, nonetheless, you can tell he's not quite a veteran of the Sunday shows and perhaps not the smoothest in his spin efforts, because his first effort, literally, Greg, is this is not the massive health care plan you're looking for. You can move along. You can go about his business. And then when that fails, because you're purchasing private insurance, like breaking news, Obamacare doesn't exist. There is no Obamacare. It's something we're in the Matrix. There is no spoon. If you concentrate your mind, Obamacare doesn't really. And then all the problems you're having, they're the problem with your insurer. The insurance companies are bad. This is why we need single payer and stuff like that. So he should probably know better. And I think that suggests a certain amount of lack of prep time for that appearance. Between this and the previous statements, you know, that there are going to be three different spins attempted by Democrats as they approach November. The first is that everything's going fine. David Plouffe did that at one of the Sunday shows. The other one will be what you're seeing from the red state Democrats are, oh, we know there are problems, but I'd like to fix them. Those fixes never actually get written down into legislation. They never get introduced, and they certainly never get past the Senate. And then the third one will be just kind of a denial that Obamacare exists, that Angus King demonstrated here, and we'll see how that one plays. Because if it's a sufficiently low information voter, you can turn out that, oh, it was all mythical. It didn't really exist. It was this big hoax, ha-ha, everybody go back to the health care plan you had before.
Does that mean Pajama Boy never happened?
In a way, you know, actually, this should be the Republican slogan. Erase Obamacare from history. Turn back the clock. Do the, you know. What's intriguing is you'll see probably, you know, the Obama administration and Obama in his little bubble, utterly convinced that this is a sterling success, will probably go with slogans like, we can't turn back the clock, when in fact most Americans are like, you know, I like the old plan. I was paying less and, you know, I could have the doctor I had. And turning back the clock sounds pretty good right about now.
Happy deadline day, everyone.
Deadline-ish day, remember.
That's true.
If you say, I tried, I just couldn't get through, then you're allowed to buy it like mid-April, kind of, May, you know. So, anyway.
All right, Jim, have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to be with us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.